And we welcome you to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. Good to have you with us. And our mission every week to keep South Florida informed on local and regional news and issues affecting our community with a panel of the area and state's top journalists. And this week, we welcome aboard our old friend Jim DeFede from CBS 4 Television, where he is an investigative reporter and also the host of the Sunday morning program Facing South Florida. Mr. DeFede, welcome back.
Thank you, Phil.
Also with us here is the Miami Herald's political editor. He's joined us on our election broadcasts in the past, and it's good to have Sergio Bustos, who also edits State Stories. We'll talk a lot about state stuff, too. Hi, Sergio. Welcome back to you.
Buenos dias. Top of the morning to you.
And
or afternoon.
That leads us into the first discussion about immigration, we'll talk about in just a couple of moments. But first, we'll also welcome aboard John O'Connor, who is a reporter for State Impact Florida, which covers education issues here in the state of Florida, a lot of other things associated with that. And John joins us from our sister station, WUSF, in St. Petersburg. John, how are you? Good to talk to you again. Do you have us? Ooh, we don't hear him. I don't hear John, so we'll try to get John back connected. We have a lot to get to on the show, and we'll talk about education. Of course, the governor's new budget, some state stuff. It's all on the table for us, and you're welcome to join via the Public Insight Network. We'll start off, though, with the immigration reform legislation. After admitting that failing to act on it was the biggest missed opportunity of his first term, President Obama declared this week that now was the time to fix the nation's broken immigration system. The announcement by the president comes a day after a group of bipartisan eight U.S. senators, including Florida's freshman Republican from Miami, Marco Rubio, put out their own plan.
If I live surrounded by immigrants, my neighbors are immigrants, my family's immigrants, married into a family of immigrants. I see immigration every single day. I see the good of immigration. I see how important it is for our future. And as most Americans, I recognize how critical an immigration system that works has been for our heritage as it is for our history, for our future. By the same token, I see the negative that illegal immigration has been for our country and the problems that it causes.
So while disagreeing on the exact path, these separate proposals focus on the same principles, each providing a way for most of the estimated 11 million people already in the U.S. illegally to become citizens.
We also have to ensure that we don't do anything that encourages people to come here illegally in the future. But by the same token, we are dealing with 11 million human beings who are here undocumented, the vast and enormous majority of whom have come here in pursuit of what all of us would recognize as the American dream.
There's Senator Rubio, and also plans to strengthen border security, which is not as much of an issue for us here, a crackdown on employers who hire illegal immigrants, streamlining the system in general. Sergio Bustos, and by the way, we should say 825,000 undocumented immigrants of the 11 million living here in Florida. So what does that mean here in our immigrant-rich community, Sergio?
Well, you know, this whole issue of immigration is one where it goes back again and again in the past, but everyone's right on this issue, okay? The conservatives are right. Folks who came across the border, overstayed a visa, have broken the law. On the other hand, everyone's right on the other end, saying, well, most of them are here for work. They've been employed by employers who broke the law, and something's got to be done with it, but can never figure out what to do. Now, here we go again is my thing. Now, I don't know if with Rubio's star power it's going to help, but he's getting a lot of pushback from some conservatives and Tea Party types. It's a lot of mixed feelings on this. It's still a long way from actually coming true, but this may be the best chance they have. But if they don't get it done this year, they won't be dealing with it in 2014.
So President Obama says in an interview with Univision here during the presidential campaign that was his biggest mistake during the first term was not getting something done on immigration. Now we have his plan. We have the plan by the eight senators, including Marco Rubio. Jim, is this a reality on the horizon?
Well, two things. It was a mistake, but it was also a blessing for him that he didn't get it done because it guaranteed him a very nice wedge issue going into the 2012 election, which is why largely he was able to carry 72% of the Hispanic vote. Having now won and never having to be on the ballot again, it frees President Obama much more aggressively to go after that. More importantly, the Republicans now realize they can't keep this issue alive. This is now a wedge issue that hurts them, and they know it's going to consistently hurt them. So I'm optimistic that there's actually going to be a reform package. And I think that if you watched Senator Rubio's actions over the last couple of weeks, his going on conservative talk radio, he had Rush Limbaugh eating out of the palm of his hands on this issue, with Rush Limbaugh applauding him. Now, there is a distinct difference between the president's proposal and the Gang of Eight's proposal, and that really is about the trigger of when that pathway can start taking place. There's going to be this panel that's going to be, you talked about how border security isn't a big issue for us here in Florida, but border security is the primary issue that'll dictate, you know, whether or not the path to citizenship opens up, whether or not those doors open, because until this panel that still has to be determined says, yes, border security has been adequately achieved, we can now move forward part two. Until that's achieved, that's the difference. The president doesn't really have that trigger. The Gang of Eight does. The effectiveness of that trigger, that's going to be the real fight.
And you're listening to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. That is Jim DeFede from CBS4 Television. Also with us is Sergio Bustos, the political and state editor for the Miami Herald. I'm Phil Latzman, I believe, breathing in the background. No, he's not there. I thought I heard him breathing. But we'll get maybe John O'Connor on for our discussion about education that we'll have throughout the hour as well. I'll be having a discussion with you as well. Online and on the phone, if you have a comment about immigration reform, we'd love to hear from you. 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Perhaps you are undocumented resident here in South Florida. We also have on our Facebook page a conversation that is being hosted by our hardworking producer, Elaine Chen, and that is at the WLRN Miami, Florida Roundup Facebook page. You can also tweet us at WLRN, and we're going to maybe hear from some folks along the way. Elizabeth from Tampa wrote us, by the way, through the Public Insight Network, that she thinks undocumented immigrants should have a path to citizenship because, quote, immigration makes the U.S. a better place, but illegal immigrants are a danger to all of us who walk, drive, ride buses, etc. With legalization, they'd be able to get driver's license, auto insurance, education, health care, and all sorts of things that would make them better neighbors and residents. John's not there, but Jim, you wanted to add something to
this
discussion?
I think while we gave a lot of credit to Senator Marco Rubio, the other person locally to keep an eye on is Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart, because he's sort of carrying the water on the House side of this. And I think it's fascinating to sort of see Republicans rallying. You know, that Gang of Eight, and Sergio can comment on this too. You know, Marco Rubio may have been the most junior member of that Gang of Eight, but was, you know, with McCain and Schumer and Menendez and a whole bunch of a whole list of others. But Rubio was the most important because Rubio gave them that conservative bona fides, that conservative credential, street cred that they need to carry this. So this is a big moment for Marco Rubio.
You mentioned that the politics of this, and Sergio, I want you to respond to this, though. The Republicans willing to go along after getting walloped in November and elsewhere by Hispanic voters. Now, I spent some time at the University of Miami this week, and I spoke with David Abraham, who's a law professor at UM who specializes in immigration.
On the one hand, he wants to be, and the party is looking to him to be, the point man for move toward the Hispanic voting population. On the other hand, he's also a darling of the Republican right and the Tea Party movement, and those folks have not yet reconciled themselves with anything that smells like, sounds like, could be misconstrued as amnesty.
All right, so that is talking about Marco Rubio. Sergio, what do you think politically?
No, I think, as Jim mentioned, this pathway to citizenship, how does an undocumented immigrant end up becoming a U.S. citizen? How long would it take? If the Gang of Eight plan goes through, it could take decades or a long time. That's not going to set well with immigration advocates. On the other hand, they're going to need more than a Gang of Eight. They're going to need a gang of 60 in the Senate. And in the House, that's another a tough fight, because the way the House is drawn up, it's the redistricting. A lot of these districts are all very well protected. And so the real fight is not at the general election, but it's at the primary. And that's where this issue will divide people very much.
Well, so we have listeners on the line that want to talk about this. And we asked specifically for perhaps some undocumented listeners in the audience. We found one, Frida, who is in Miami. Frida, welcome to the Florida Roundup. And what do you think of these proposals?
Hi, I'm an undocumented immigrant, and I'm glad that finally we have Republicans and Democrats working together. I think that they realize, especially the Republican Party, realize how important it is the vote of Latinos, and they really need to show for, if they want to win the next election, that they want to do something about immigration reform. I'm not so convinced about what they proposed, because at the beginning of the Gang of Eight proposal, it says that we're not going to do any kind of procedure to legalize people until we fix the borders. And, like, And then what does that mean? What does it mean to protect the borders? And how many years is that going to take? For the past 4 years, they've been working on that. Is it going to take another 4 years? Is it going to take another 10 years? When is someone going to decide when it's already secure?
Frida, can I ask you where are you from?
I am from Peru.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been here?
I've been here for 9 years.
9 years. Do you always feel that the end could come, that one day you're going to be picked up and sent back?
Yes. I mean, that was always the fear. And thank God I was able to get a deferred action because I'm a direct student. But still, like, even though I have this security for the next 2 years, that doesn't really mean much for the future, and that doesn't really mean much for my family, my community, and the fear that still a lot of people feel.
Jim Defeedy.
Hi, Frida. Just quick question. Did you come here on a visa and overstay, or I don't want to get too particular with you, but did you come here on a visa and overstay, or did you come with your parents illegally?
No, I came in a plane. I had a visa.
See, that's the interesting thing, and Marco Rubio makes that point, is when we talk about border security, you know, 40% of those who are undocumented currently in this country are here for overstaying visas.
Right, exactly.
You know, so that's a component that often gets lost in all this discussion.
Right. Go ahead, Frida.
Yes, and also the fact that the people coming through the border has decreased.
Well, I tell you what,
your
cell phone is a little bit sketchy there, so we'll say goodbye, but I do appreciate you calling and telling us your story. Good luck, no matter what happens, Frida. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right. So I do believe we have John O'Connor in Tampa. Now, he may have been listening along to this, but I think we can all agree here in Miami that this issue is clouded one way, and in places like Tampa, St. Pete, and North Florida, it's the other way, perhaps a little whiter, maybe less of a population of immigrants and undocumented. John O'Connor, we welcome you to the show. How does this week and how does the immigration debate sound up there?
Well, it's, as you said, that it is a little different population up here. A lot of the folks in the Tampa Bay region kind of retirees from elsewhere. It's not the kind of economic and family issue that it is in South Florida. So it'll be interesting to watch. The Tea Party up here obviously has a little bigger foothold in politics, and so I think there's a lot of folks who are going to be listening very carefully to particularly what Marco Rubio and some of the Florida folks say about this issue.
All right, and with a final note on this, at least for this segment, Ed from Miami writes that undocumented immigrants should not be given a path to citizenship. Quote, he says, not before all the others that are legally online waiting for their chance, such as family members, professional workers with H-1B or O visas, and investors that have been in the country for many years, abiding by the law, paying taxes, investing, and waiting patiently in the slow process to obtain at least a green card. Now, we're going to take some more calls on this and move on to some other topics. This is still up for discussion here, and you're listening to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. Our guests are John O'Connor, joining us from State Impact Florida in St. Pete. He's joining us there. And Sergio Bustos from the Miami Herald here in our studios in South Florida, along with Jim Defeedy from CBS4 Television. Now, this sordid story, quickly here, Sergio, about Senator Menendez, who's one of the Gang of Eight, if you will, that has introduced this legislation, was in the news for other reasons this week. One of the two other Cuban-American members of the U.S. Senate in some hot water, and this is a story that has been reported widely in the Miami Herald. What's going on with the New Jersey senator?
Yeah, this kind of started in the blogosphere a couple months ago, right before his election. He was elected to the Senate in New Jersey, and what's happened is there are allegations that he and a major donor to his campaign and to the Democrats and Republicans alike.
And he's from West Palm Beach.
And he's from West Palm Beach, this eye doctor, had been taking flights to and from the Dominican Republic to the doctor's home in Casa de Campo, and had allegedly been involved with underage prostitutes. On top of that, there's an interesting issue unfolding in terms of the relationship between the two men, the senator and the eye doctor, and the kind of money went back and forth. The senator admitted that he had to repay the eye doctor back for the flights back to and from the Dominican. So this story is long from over. There'll be a lot. There's an FBI investigation underway. As far as we know, and the story really broke this week with the news that they had raided the doctor's offices up in
and found these things that may connect Senator Menendez. Right.
And there could be Medicare fraud involved.
Medicare, which is a big thing here.
It's a big one.
I mean, that people are telling me, my sources are telling me, is that the raid, you know, the FBI's interest certainly started with whistleblowers trying to talk about the relationship between the doctor and the senator. The raid in West Palm of his medical offices is much more focused around the issue of Medicare fraud. You had OIG, Office of Inspector General investigators from HHS. It's, you know, I don't think they were carting out boxes of files related to underage prostitutes.
Little black books.
Right. No. I think they were carting out financial records as it related to the HHS stuff and Medicare fraud. And I think that's where a large chunk of this is headed.
But
right
nothing
now.
Directly connecting Senator Menendez with teenage prostitution. Yet, at least.
No,
nothing.
Only allegations.
Just these notes. And Senator Menendez, by the way, says that these are scurrilous accusations.
Well, it was put out there initially by a right-wing blog just before the election. So it's sort of like there's clearly a political motive here. It doesn't mean that the allegations aren't true. It doesn't mean that they're not true. It just means that there was a political motivation, which raises everyone sort of needing to be a little bit cautious as they approach, as they sort of look into this.
And you're listening to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman, Jim Defiti from CBS 4, Sergio Bustos from the Miami Herald, and John O'Connor from State Impact Florida. We're going to maybe return to that issue if you've called in or written us. We do have an online discussion as well on Twitter at WLRN and on our Facebook page, the Florida Roundup on WLRN, which our producer is moderating along with doing other things. She's juggling all kinds of things back there, Elaine Chan. So when we come back, though, we're going to open up some state issues and some major news this week. The budget has been introduced, and you might want to call it robust from what was an austere governor. We'll talk a little bit more about that and other state issues when the roundup continues in just a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Phil Latzman, and again, we welcome your questions. We have some folks on the line. We may get back into the discussion of immigration, so be patient with us. You can also tweet us at WLRN. Even Jim Defiti has gone crazy with the tweeting. 3 years
love
ago,
the tweeting.
When we started the show, you had no idea what Twitter was.
I didn't know. I didn't tweet. I didn't do any of it. And now, the only thing I'm on Instagram. Even I have no idea what it is, but I signed up for it.
Instagram. Yeah.
I think it involves like pictures. Telegrams or something.
It's Morse code.
Yeah.
But you're at Defiti.
At Defiti.
And Sergio, you're also active on Twitter.
Yes, I'm at Harold Bustos.
I think more active than all of us is John O'Connor. I read his tweets. John, what's your handle?
I'm John R. O'Connor.
Okay, and you can read all kinds of stuff that John does related to state education stuff and other things. I'm at Phil Latzman, and I think reading John's feed this week, we know he's from Baltimore, the Maryland area, is the getting set for the Ravens and the 49ers in the Super Bowl, and our producer Elaine Chen, although she's not a football fan, did stand up there for the Ravens. So speaking of stuff, though, going on in the state, the governor, Rick Scott, his so-called Families First budget was unveiled this week for the 2013-14 fiscal year. And it's good news, according to the governor, as Florida continues to recover from the Great Recession. Break it down, go.
Florida's Families First budget is $74.2 billion, $27.1 billion of which is general revenue. This total reflects a 4.7% growth in general revenues. The increase in general revenues is primarily attributed to increased sales tax collections. This is further evidence that Florida's economy is back on track and growing again.
And as evidence of that, he wants to put $18.5 billion into K-12 education, another $5 billion into higher education, $1.2 billion increase as far as the K-12 is concerned, which includes a $2,500 raise for all full-time teachers.
By doubling down on our investment in K-12 education, this billion-dollar investment sustains last year's billion-dollar investment in K-12 and puts another $1.2 billion in Florida classrooms.
And it boosts per-student spending about 6.5%. John, how is this renewed look at education funding going over with educators in the state? Are they satisfied with what they're hearing from the governor's proposal on the budget?
Well, I spent a couple days this week in Orlando at FETC, which is a big education technology conference. And in talking to the teachers, there's clearly some distrust on their part. obviously happy that the governor has proposed the raises. They would love to have the raises. But at the same time, they're saying, hey, wait a minute, you're the same governor that just took 3% out of my paycheck a couple years ago to fund state pensions. You're also the same governor that came in and immediately cut education spending. So, again, they're grateful for this proposal. They'd love to have the money, but I don't know that it's going to win a whole lot of trust from teachers.
Governor says now's the time to do it. 4.6% increase in sales tax revenues, Sergio Bustos. But there are some people who are saying, well, maybe you should put some of that away, not spend it. Some of the Republicans in the legislature were questioning whether this budget is too large.
Yeah, I mean, it's a remarkable turnaround for Mr. Grinch turns Santa Claus, Ebenezer Scrooge has some ghosts visit him overnight, and next thing you know, he's Mr. Generous now. You know, this is as much politics as anything else. He's up for re-election in 2 years. He reads his poll numbers. They're down low. Education is one of those things you can't be against. Who can be against educating children and having the best schools because they are our future, that kind of thing. No doubt there. But it's incredible that the transformation from what he was when he came in. He was the outsider. He was the one that was going to tell us what to do. Now he's almost become the consummate politician.
Jim, what do you think, Jim? Is it a complete transformation, or is this just a political animal reacting to the which way the wind blow?
Well, the ghost that came in visiting him was his pollster. You know, to basically tell him that you're going to be the governor of Governor Past if you don't do something fairly quickly. The question I have for Sergio, because he follows us a lot closer in terms of Tallahassee, I haven't been able to figure out, is this budget dead on arrival with the legislature? And they just sort of say, okay, governor, this is a nice campaign document. You go run around the state campaigning on it. Meanwhile, we'll actually do the work of coming up with a budget on our own.
Yeah, you've got the House Speaker and the Senate President. I think they haven't. They're pretty cool characters. We met them this week during the AP legislative meetings, and they've got their own priorities. And one of the things they've said is, you know, that's nice that you want to give $2,500 raises to teachers, but let's work out the details on that. But they're not going to criticize him because he's part of the party.
Well, here in
and
fact,
they're just going to hold court for now. They'll have some hearings, but they're going to have the final say. Will Weatherford and Don Gates. And they will have the final say on the budget.
Speaking of Will Weatherford, who is the House Speaker, he said there may be a budget surplus, but not enough for comfort.
We do have more revenue, but let me be clear, our budget surplus is breathing room. It's not enough room to put your feet up on the couch.
So there's another analogy. We're all full of analogies today. But John O'Connor, do you think other GOP members of the legislature are apt to go along with this, outside of Everybody's for Education?
Well, it's interesting because there's some real policy conflicts that the GOP has supported here that are raised by the governor's budget. We have the Student Success Act, which requires that schools pay teachers based on their performance. Well, the governor has proposed across-the-board raises, which is, everybody gets the same amount. And so you've had some lawmakers express some concerns about that. You also have a requirement that's coming down the road here for the state to switch to this new standardized test as part of Common Core standards. And the new test will be given on computers, and it's all computerized. In addition, the state is requiring schools to deliver more instruction digitally. So there's a big push to add more technology capability to schools, bandwidth and rewire schools and things like that. And the Florida Department of Education asked for $442 million in their budget request this year for technology to help meet these goals a year from now this fall. And the governor's budget doesn't include that. So he's forced lawmakers to make some tough choices here.
Jim?
The person who I would love to hear from on this budget is Jeb Bush. Because you talk about repudiating the past and sort of completely divorcing yourself. How many times were we told during Jeb Bush's term, two terms in office, and even after him, even under Charlie Crist, that educational performance is not based on per pupil spending? That it's not about the amount of money we spend on students. It's about the quality of the teachers. It's about the instruction element. And here the governor comes along, and that mantra has been the Republican mantra for the past 12 years, 13, 14 years. And now suddenly it's, oh, no, we need to spend more per student. And so it really is a shocking sort of display. I'm trying to figure out is the governor going to start becoming in danger of almost getting a challenger on his right? Like, is the Tea Party that was so instrumental in helping him come along, are they going to start realizing that this isn't the governor, this isn't the guy we supported early on. He's coming out for a lot of things that we didn't necessarily think that he was going to. Now, I don't think he's going to get primaried on the right, but he may.
There's plenty of chatter on that front. And we've still got another year to go, really, before you'll start to see that. But there is chatter in Tallahassee over challenging him. Because of his unpopularity, you know, overall, not to mention this latest budget's going to put him in a real predicament.
John, back to the education stuff. You talked about the online education, the initiative there, a lot of money being put out for that. A lot of that for possibly creating an online university. There's $5 billion now in the state budget for state universities and colleges. As far as higher education is concerned, the governor was here in Miami this week at Miami-Dade College to promote his $10,000 bachelor degree challenge. And now apparently all 23 colleges have agreed to that challenge. They're still trying to deal with the budget cuts from last year. How are they going to possibly do all this and charge $10,000 for bachelor degrees?
Well, we had a report that came out this week kind of analyzing the options for the state in terms of providing more online courses for higher education. And they decided, the report said basically that a separate online university was the most expensive way to go about doing it. And so Will Weatherford was one person who was supporting that. And so maybe we'll get some backing off from that idea. There's been some chatter that we've seen that $300 million in budget cuts that the state universities took last year, well, that might be restored this year. The governor's budget earmarks money specifically for the University of Florida to help it become a top 10 public university. So, you know, some of these things that have been put in place in the past couple of years may be undone this year in this budget by lawmakers.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup. I'm Phil Latzman. John O'Connor with State Impact Florida joining us from St. Pete. You can see his work if you go to our website, WLRN.org, and click on the Education tab. And also, you can search for State Impact Florida. Jim DeFede from CBS4 Television with us. We're going to talk about some more local and regional stuff a bit later on in the show and discuss some of the things Jim's working on as far as investigations. And also, Sergio Bustos here from the Miami Herald, who's the state and political editor. And Sergio's going to be involved in some stuff with us online. We're having a chat, and I don't have that right in front of me, but I know that Elaine, our producer, does. But we're leading up to this, going to have a chat with folks about what's going on in Tallahassee. And since we're 500 miles away, trying to bridge that gap, the session's just about to sort of get ramped up here. We have the budget now, so this would be a great time for you to get involved and make Tallahassee accountable. This is what we're calling this event. It's a free event partnering with the Miami Herald and WLRN. It's Monday, February 25th at 6:30. It's at Broward Center for the Performing Arts. And we are going to have there Senator Chris Smith, the Fort Lauderdale Democratic leader, and Senator Jack LaValla, who's the chair of the Ethics and Elections Commission. He's from Central Florida, so going to represent both parts of the state, or at least the southern part, and have your input as well. So again, it's Monday, February 25th, 6:30 at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts. Really love to see you there. Go to WLRN.org to reserve your seat and make Tallahassee accountable. I'll be hosting all that, so please give it a good show. Go online and show up. And there's an online discussion about citizens, which we're going to be talking about in just a moment. But there's one other thing as far as the state is concerned that is kind of hanging out there right now, and it's this Medicaid expansion. The budget does not include funds for expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. That still remains major contention between the state of Florida and the federal government. Governor Scott said yesterday it would be premature because of too many unanswered questions.
You can't have high quality fund it at $2,382 when the national average is
$4,100. Let's cut that one off. I'm sorry, Paul. Live radio. It's the next one. It's budget Medicaid, if we have it.
You can't have high quality when you fund it at
That's not the one. Well, anyway. Here it is. Go ahead.
I cannot overstate our continued concern with the federal government's ability to pay for new Medicaid recipients over the lifetime of the Medicaid program. The fiscal chaos in Washington is another major factor in the Medicaid expansion decision facing Florida.
And it was a recent poll that showed nearly two-thirds of Floridians in favor of expanding Medicaid and research that it could actually save the state up to $100 million in health costs. Sergio, why is there still a discrepancy between what the state sees in federal Medicaid and assistance and what the federal government sees in it?
Well, you know, Rick Scott has always been opposed to what he calls Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. And more recently, we did a PolitiFact on him where he suggested expanding it would cost the state $28 billion. And state folks themselves said, Mo, it's closer to $3 billion. He kept on repeating the higher number. But, you know, bottom line is this governor just does not want to see this implemented. And I think he's going to put up any roadblock he can in his power to make that not happen.
What's interesting, though, is that while there's been strong conservative, you know, opposition to this throughout, after the election, you know, as I think I'm correct in this, Governor Jan Brewer in Arizona said she'd go ahead with the Medicaid expansion.
Right,
so there's, I think there's starting to be a little bit of cracks. And if you start seeing Jan Brewer, who nobody doubts her conservative credentials in Arizona, if you see her, other conservative governors, you know, start taking the money, that just adds the pressure to Rick Scott to say, you're really out there on your own.
Now, you mentioned whether the other members of the state, other state leaders agree. Our health reporter, Sammy Mack, this week was at a Medicaid forum in Miami, and she spoke with Republican State Senator Rene Garcia of Hialeah, who says he is now reconsidering his opposition to expansion.
I think we will move in that direction.
We will move in that direction, meaning you'll start to consider expanding Medicaid?
We have to consider it. We have to consider whether we do it or not. I mean, look, it's the law of the land. But, you know, I believe in state rights. And if the federal government is throwing this down our throat or shoving this down our throats, I think it's important that we manage it to the best of our abilities.
Right, shoving it down their throats, but we've got to deal with it, Sergio.
Yeah, you know, House Speaker Will Weatherford and Senate President Don Gates said this week they're going to study pretty closely. I think when they see the numbers, they're going to end up taking, you know, expanding Medicaid.
And the other major issue that's going to be discussed during the session that we will continue to talk about leading up to the session and during the session is the issue with citizens' property insurance. Property insurance in general is a major issue for everybody that owns a home, at least, and many people in our listening audience. Many customers being moved off citizens to private insurers. I'm one of them, by the way. But a lot of people are wondering what happens next, when they're going to get that bill for that private insurance. And we asked members of the Public Insight Network about citizens, and we heard from this Broward man who says he feels like he's being held hostage.
My name is Dan McMurtry. My comment is we are one of the people that were pulled out of citizens. We turned that option down, and they still pulled us out of citizens. And the part I have a problem with is the new insurance company can't give me any idea what the new insurance will cost when it comes up time for my renewal. And I just feel like I'm being held hostage here without having any opportunity in being able to shop and price insurance. And I think that our state legislators should have done us a disservice.
So, Sergio, many homeowners, and I know I'm one of them, that if I get a bill, it's going to be a huge increase in insurance. It's going to be more than my taxes. A lot of people are considering it, borrowing money to pay off their houses or taking their savings, paying off their houses so they don't have to pay for the insurance. A lot of questions, though, that remain unanswered about what kind of insurance people have after they've been transitioned off of citizens. And I know this is a conversation you're going to have next week, but you've been looking into this.
Yeah, I think the hard part about this is Citizens is the insurer of last resort for a lot of Floridians. And the problem becomes in that both Governor Scott and citizens themselves are pushing more and more people off and making it much more difficult, as we documented last year in a series of stories. Where this goes is hard to tell because, as you noted with the caller there, it's almost like a tax on people in the end when all they see is maybe their property tax come down a bit because of values, but that their insurance rates have skyrocketed. And it's becoming more and more an economic issue in terms of selling a home or getting the real estate market to get moving, because when people start to see the price tag on insurance, they start to shy away from maybe a house that might be too much to insure. But again, keep in mind that Governor Scott is still moving to get more people out. He would like to see citizens completely disappear and let the private market take over.
We also asked members of the Public Insight Network. We talked about, we just heard somebody giving us a Google voicemail there, but this comes from Linda in Hialeah, who says, why aren't our lawmakers and Governor Scott pursuing a more comprehensive insurance reform, i.e. regional insurance programs, instead of having insurance by the state? Just look at all the damage the Southeast states have suffered recently. So this is a major issue. We know, we hear from our listeners about this. So as part of our town hall project, we're going to be taking your questions about citizens' property. This is next Thursday at noon. So it's going to be a week from yesterday, noon
on our website, WLRN.org. And Sergio will be moderating that discussion along with a reporter that knows more about this than perhaps anybody, Tolu Olorunipa, who is in the Tallahassee Bureau for the Miami Herald and St. Pete Times, done a ton of coverage on citizens. He will answer your questions on this better just about than anybody. And this is, again, next Thursday on our website, WLRN.org, with Sergio and Tolu Olorunipa. And we'll continue this discussion, I'm sure, throughout the session. I'm Phil Latzman. This is the Florida Roundup. We'll promise to try to get back to some of the calls. It's one of those days we wish we had 2 hours to do the show. We don't, but we'll try to get back to some of the feedback on immigration and some other local and regional news when we continue the Roundup with our panel in just a moment. And welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Phil Latzman. Jim DeFede from CBS4 TV. John O'Connor from State Impact Florida joining us from St. Pete. Sergio Bustos from the Miami Herald. We'll take some over your calls, more of your calls on the immigration issue. But John, before we get back to some of the calls we have on the line, we had some technical difficulties getting you on at the beginning of the show. But just talk about some of the things you're working on for State Impact Florida. And a lot of it is involving the budget, which was released this week, I'm sure. But what else is on the horizon for you guys up there?
Well, we spent a lot, again, as I was saying earlier, there's a big education technology conference in Orlando this week. And so we spent a lot of time looking at technology issues for schools, particularly as they relate to these two big state policy changes that are coming down the road with the adoption of Common Core standards and a requirement that schools deliver about half their instruction digitally. So these are issues, and it's interesting because the old cliche about trying to build the airplane while they're flying it kind of applies here, because the school districts say, look, we've got 2 years before some of these requirements hit us, and we still can't answer very basic questions about what the requirements are and how we can meet them.
Common Core, which replaces FCAT, which Jim talked about to Jeb Bush, and that was the cornerstone of the Jeb Bush administration, the FCATs, the standardized testing. These Common Core standards are replacing the FCATs, but are they completely changing the way the state of Florida assesses its students and teachers?
Yeah, the key change to Common Core is the standards. What Florida has now and what the Common Core standards will put into place, there's not a whole lot of difference in terms of what they're asking students to know. The biggest difference is that students will have to show how they know what they know. And so there's a big emphasis on making students show their work, explain their reasoning, kind of support their answer with evidence from the text. And so that's kind of the big change with Common Core. The tests will be different, because they're going to be computerized. And so that allows kind of different forms of testing. You're going to see totally new types of questions on these tests that you can do because it's a computer rather than a paper and pencil test.
All right. So you can look for more of that. Some really good work done at State Impact Florida with John O'Connor and his partner, Sarah Gonzalez, who cover education like nobody else does in the state. And certainly it's more to be discussed online. And you hear that on the radio every Monday, by the way. We have a State Impact Florida feature. Back to the discussion we had to start the show about immigration. We did give out the number and ask for feedback. We do have a lot of people that have been waiting on the line. We did ask for those that were undocumented in our audience to react to the legislation that's being proposed in Washington this week, the proposals, the plans put forth. And we do have another such a resident of South Florida, Samuel from Miami. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I had a quick observation here that this whole immigration reform is being projected for people who are undocumented in this country. But I want to bring into your purview that what about the folks who are in this country in a documented way, who are legal, and they are stuck in these administrative queues for last decade and a half? Is anybody talking about these folks?
Say that one more time. Claire, Sergio wants to respond, but I don't know if I understood exactly what the...
I think what he's saying is true, is when you look at folks who actually go the proper legal channels to get into the country, depending on where you are from, and I'll mention some countries, the Philippines, China, Mexico, and India, you could get in line and wait years and years to enter the country legally. And then when you go through the immigration system, it's quite a chore to get to come over. Now, one aspect of this whole provision is that they are going to encourage more and more folks who come here to study, that if they have the right skills, Senator Rubio would very much like the idea that they could stay, start businesses, and the like. But yes, the legal channel to get in this country, the hurdles are tremendous.
All right. Well, Samil, thanks very much for your call. We'll move on to another man who says he is undocumented living here in Miami, Jose. Jose, welcome to the Florida Roundup.
Hi. Good morning, everybody. My name is Jose. I do policy work for the Florida Immigrant Youth Network, and I'm also a dreamer. I just wanted to give my...
The Florida Immigration Coalition? Is that what you said? For
No, Florida Immigrant Youth Network.
Immigrant Youth Network. Okay, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah.
So, basically, I feel cautiously optimistic, and there is consensus from the Congress and from the White House that there has to be an earned pathway to citizenship. And I also understand Samir's concern about the backlog, and they've been indicating that, sure, you know, these people who are in the country right now, undocumented, have to get in the back of the line. But, you know, I'll pay $1 million for any of those representatives who can find the back of the line. So that's one of the concerns. And also the fact that they're trying to link giving people citizenship with enforcement measures in the border is kind of absurd, because this president has deported more people than any other administration and has separated permanently more families than ever. And so those are the concerns that we're looking at. And we're optimistic, and we're going to be in the front lines to fight for our families.
Jose, thanks very much. And that we have talked about that, but not on this show, Sergio, that the fact that the Obama administration has been very aggressive prior to this in enforcing and deporting people that are here illegally in the past 4 years.
Yeah, and there's been a long fight to deport anyone who's committed any kind of crime in the United States that was here illegally. And Obama's been very tough on that. I mean, he's actually been tougher. He was tougher than George Bush on that.
And spent more on border security.
Exactly. I mean, they're trying to fortify the border. Even in this legislation, there's talk of continuing to finish this building of some kind of fence or wall that would stretch the 2,000 miles of the border, which is no easy task. But again, it's one of these issues that is so emotional that it's, in the end, it's going to take it's a big political risk for anyone that jumps into the debate on immigration.
We'll take one more call and a couple of things we wanted to get to here at the end of the show. I want to save some time for Murray is in Coral Springs. Murray, welcome to the Florida Roundup. What's your story as far as immigration is concerned?
Well, full disclosure, I'm a 40-year resident of Florida holding a green card, and through my own choice, I've not become a citizen.
Where are you from?
From Canada.
Okay.
You know, they look like us. They talk like us.
Well, that's part of it, too. I mean, we talk a lot about Latin America. We talk about the Caribbean and the folks that come from elsewhere, but we don't talk about the people that necessarily next door to us, you know, in Canada, you know, and that I guess, how do you fit into the whole equation?
Well, I propose a middle ground, hopefully a viable compromise. And that is, rather than giving the illegal immigrants citizenship, which angers many people, offer them permanent residency like I have with a green card. They have all the rights and privileges of a citizen, except they can't vote or own a CB radio.
Right.
And the Miami Herald, in an interview a few days ago, editorial a few days ago, referred to that option as second-class citizenship, in which case, the second-class citizenship was a very pejorative term.
Well, but you've been here for 30-plus years, and you have your green card, and it really hasn't made too much of a difference, except that you can't vote.
Yeah, exactly. At the time I came, I had to sign up with Selective Service to be drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So I've fulfilled all the obligations of a citizen, and I don't have the representation without taxation issue that citizens of District of Columbia share. But other than that, you know, everything is pretty good, and I just want to pull that out as an option that hasn't been discussed much in this whole debate.
Interesting.
And one more thing, if I may,
quickly.
Quick shout out to Jim DeFede. I enjoyed him immensely when he was a columnist for the Miami Herald, but even more so on a serious note, his book on the day the world came. Was an outstanding piece of journalism.
I love those Canadians.
So give the title so people could read it.
The Day the World Came to Town, 9/11 in Gander, Newfoundland, is about what happened in a small town in Newfoundland, Canada on September 11, 2001. But also, just to go back to his point, I think the difference between what this gentleman was saying and what the Herald editorial was pointing out, it's one thing if you make the decision yourself not to proceed with citizenship, and it's another to be told, you won't be a citizen.
Murray, thanks very much for your call. We have a few couple of minutes left. We did promise that we'd get into a couple of little things. I don't think these are major things on our radar, but this week the Miami New Times reported that the three-time AL MVP and hometown boy Alex Rodriguez was among a handful of major league players who bought human growth hormone and other performance-enhancing substances in recent years from Biogenesis, I think they call it, a Biogenesis of America, which is now closed anti-aging clinic in Coral Gables. Some good investigative work done here by the Miami New Times, and I just, the first thing I thought was are we surprised that this is going on here in South Florida? Maybe some big names, A-Rod, some other major leagues, leaguers attached to it. But
there used to be Balco in Northern California, there was the Balco institution, and everyone went to Northern California, and so I guess when Balco shut down, South Florida became the place to go. The only other thing I'll say about this is my prediction is A-Rod never takes step foot in a batter box ever again. I think his career is over. I think he's out this next season anyway for the hip injury, and I think this all just builds and taints him to the point where he's done in baseball.
And of course, he's from here. He spent, he's contributed millions of dollars to the University of Miami at Alex Rodriguez Stadium at Mark Light Field. You wonder if somebody is going to, you know, perhaps take his name off of that. I mean, these are things that obviously are more identified for the sports world, but I guess everything has a South Florida connection. Jim, while we have you, and this is sort of a local thing, but Specs Records is closing. And Specs Records was really South Florida institution. 65 years Specs Records has been around. The one in Coral Gables just recently went out of business. Sign of the times that this is coming to an end.
Yeah, there used to be one on Biscayne Boulevard in North Miami, and when that one closed, I sort of went all weepy, and now there's a Kinko's there, and so I can get copies. I just can't get my CDs like I used to.
Yeah, but it's kind of, I mean, these are another instance.
But I download anyway. Who buys CDs anymore?
That's what happened. Yeah. Nobody goes to the CD shops. There's still a bunch of independent places, but you know, bookstores are disappearing. CD play, and last a music place is gone. You know, a place like that. It's just sort of one of those sign of the times things. And also, we read today that Maroonie was no longer going to be Maroonie.
Who are you going to call?
The jingle.
Yeah. It's going to be Auto Nation. So that's another thing. Mm-hmm. And what we conclude on this, maybe just a sports note here. Anybody got predictions on the Super Bowl here? Because we do have a Ravens fan there in John O'Connor. I want to ask him.
I predict that at the end of the game, Ray Lewis will cry. Win or lose, I predict that Ray Lewis will be crying.
I know, Sergio, you're a Redskins fan.
It's a longtime Redskins fan. I've got to go with my Washington area team, the Ravens, although they really are the Cleveland Browns.
Well, it's true. Their heritage is the Cleveland Browns. And John, you're from Baltimore, so we know you're rooting for the Ravens. Are you calling for an upset there or something?
I guess the 49ers are favored, but I think the Ravens are going to win. The 49ers have not been playing the same defense in the playoffs that they played during the regular season.
And finally this week, the Miami Heat visited the White House yesterday. President Obama honored them for winning the NBA championship last year, and Dwayne Wade even joked with the president that they could use his talent in the backcourt.
We got a 10-day contract left.
Yeah.
Pick my man up.
You guys could use a shooter.
My point guard.
So the president's a big basketball fan. Some members of the team play pickup games with him, and I guess it's nice that the president is such a big hoops fan, and we're such a hoops town right now, at least, you know.
So more hoops than Dolphins right now.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't take much. Guys, everybody, thanks for joining us. John O'Connor in Tampa and St. Pete, sorry we weren't able to spend more time with you. We'll do this again in the future. We look forward to reading all the stuff that you guys produce at State Impact Florida. Thanks very much, John. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Sergio Bustos with the Miami Herald is the Herald's political editor. He's going to go back to work, hard at work, to produce the stories the state and the region will be talking about. Sir, thank you.
Thank you.
And Jim, you do have a special series in addition to Facing South Florida.
Starting next week, Monday and Tuesday, we've tracked down an entire squad of police officers. We won't tell you the department yet. Doing nothing. I mean, when I say doing nothing, like ignoring calls, 5-month-old in danger, armed robbery calls.
CBS 4 next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks to Elaine Chan, Alicia Zuckerman, Danny Rivero, Peter Meritz, Dan Gretsch, Paul Leary, our technical supervisor, South Florida Arts Beats next. Until next week, I'm Phil Latzman. Stay informed, South Florida.